morning. This is Angela Treat-Ryan with EFTbooks.com and IDareYouRadio.com, bringing you massive support, uncommon resources, and powerful inspiration for you daring dreamers. And today I've got an amazing guest. She's an animal communicator. Her name is Joan Renquette, and she's even got a book out called Communications with All Life, Revelations of an Animal Communicator, published through Hay House. You can get it at her website, joanrenquette.com. That's JoanRenquette.com. So welcome, Joan. I'm really excited to have you on my show today.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I think people are going to be really interested in what you do. So tell us exactly in two words, what do you do?
Telepathically communicate. Those are the two words. I use telepathic communication to pick up the pictures, words, and feelings of what's going on for animals. So if someone has me come over, you know, maybe they've got a health challenge, so they want to know what the animal is feeling or what the animal wants, you know, whether the animal wants surgery, that sort of thing. Or sometimes people have behavioral challenges, so I come over and sort of, I always call it a powwow, get the animal side of the story and then the person side of the story and try to figure out from there what to do. And sometimes people just want to check in and see how the animal's doing.
Mm, okay. So it doesn't necessarily have to be some critical situation. It can just simply be, how's my animal doing?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people do that.
Oh, that's great. And when you do that, do you do a series of calls, or is it just one call? What usually happens?
It's funny. Most people, I mean, I've been doing it long enough now that the cycle of a dog or cat's life, people that have been with me since the beginning are, you know, calling me with that at the end stage of one animal's life, and then later on, the beginning of getting a puppy or a kitten or a young horse or a bird. I don't have anything in terms of a series set up. I mean, I have a series of classes I teach for people to learn animal communication, but I always say if I'm doing my job, they call me once. If they have, you know, the people that tend to call me more are people that might be competing with their animal and trying to, you know, whether it's dog shows or horse shows, trying to sort out or troubleshoot any challenges there.
Oh, now you've brought up two important points here. You give animal communication classes?
Yeah, I love teaching.
Are these classes in person or are they teleclass?
Well, for the last 11 years, I've done it in person, and this coming winter, after the new year, I'm going to start doing some teleseminars.
And do you have a newsletter that people can get?
Yes.
Okay, so anybody who signed up for your newsletter can get information about these teleclasses.
Yes.
That's great. And then you said something else, competition. At first when you said that, I thought, oh, people are competing with their animals? You know?
Yeah.
For what? You know, and then, oh, okay, they're in competitions.
Right.
So what is something that somebody would want to help their animals in a competition?
I'll tell you, I have met so many people that do the dog shows, and in the obedience, like one client was a really well-known dog trainer, and she was trying to get this final title, and there was in the obedience class, there's a certain place where the dog has to pick up a glove and take it to the person, and, you know, the dog stopped wouldn't pick up the glove and just kind of stared at her. And in that situation, you know, she was over-anticipating that he was going to screw it up after he'd screwed it up once. And so we worked with that. I've got a good story in my book about a woman that is a trial lawyer, and she would do that was also an obedience class, and she just got so nervous. And finally I said, well, are you like that when you walk into trial? And she's like, no. And I said, well, why don't you put your little lawyer walk on when you go into the ring and shut your head off and give it a shot? So she won. But with horses, it's the same sort of thing. It's the distraction that the person has a good chunk of the time. I mean, if the person is nervous or if the person is over-anticipating that, oops, we didn't make that water jump last time. So, you know, it still comes down to a lot of the changing the person's thinking. Yeah, and most of us had a really terrible experience the last horse show or dog show. It's usually the human's distraction. Which is something that I think EFT is, I've had people use that at horse shows, dog shows. That's a perfect fit because it's the person has to let go of it.
I'm kind of thinking about what Colleen told me where animals think in pictures. If a person is nervous about something, they're actually projecting those nervous pictures to the animal, plus the feelings, right?
Yeah, and words. I mean, the animals definitely pick up on words.
So have you actually used EFT, the emotional freedom techniques, with dogs and horses and cats?
A lot. I have one really kind of funny story. I used to live in Florida, and Wellington is a big international show scene. And I had this one client call me and say, you know, I don't care what you're doing today. You have to cancel all your clients, and I will take care of any financial good of this. My horse is going after ponies in the warm-up ring. And I was like, oh, that's kind of dangerous.
A little bit.
Yeah. And I usually don't need this. I mean, most of my clients I do on the phone. So I don't have to actually visually see the problem to be able to help get to the bottom of it. But I just happened to drive up, walk into the warm-up ring while the trainer was trying to ride the horse, and he was indeed going after the ponies and nearly bucked the trainer off. So I said, I have this great idea, but we have to go kind of far away because we're going to look really weird when we do this. And so we went down a barn aisle that we knew there weren't any other people, and me, the owner, the trainer, and the horse, you know, it's pretty funny at first, you know, even though I hate ponies, I love and accept myself.
Right. So were you actually tapping on the horse or on yourself?
I tapped on myself. I tapped a bit on the horse. I have done some tapping on. I sort of mixed it up because we worked on several different issues based on what the horse had told me. The horse had, you know, given me pretty clear pictures that when he was little, he was picked on by ponies. And nobody ever thought he was going to get that big. And he got huge. So he was using his power to
get back at him.
Yeah. So we had to kind of, I'm telling you, it was a sight to see the huge horse lunging after ponies.
Wow.
But what is funny is not only did he calm down, he sort of was still giving them dirty looks and, you know, not snorting, but, you know, as close as a horse could get to snorting at a pony. And they made it through that week-long horse show without any further bucking or lunging, and then, but you could still tell he hated them. But what's funny is that about 2 months later, the woman called me and she said, "Tony, you're never going to believe this. I just moved Shakespeare, that's the horse, into a new barn, and there's four ponies, and one of them's next to him, and he's making friends with them."
Oh, how awesome!
Yeah,
that's how awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's funny. I've used it a fair amount for people with that are competitive, just because those are the people that tend to maybe every other week need some help. One gal, the polo player, has this horse that, you know, when polo you have three or four horses at least, and kind of her, not her favorite, but her superstar, was starting to spook down by the goal post, which is not a good thing because that's kind of the goal, is to get
to the goal.
Yeah. And so we used EFT on her worry, that he had really been picking up on her worry that year. This last summer, she's played him in two chuckers, so she's using him double now. So that worked out well.
That's interesting. Well, now, how does working with the animals tell you about their humans?
Some animals may be prone more to worry or prone more to certain, I guess what we would call human emotions, but they, you know, I'm not saying that they come into the world as a blank being, because certainly they're going to be affected by the, you know, being in the womb and all of that. So a feral cat may, you know, give off some fear of humans to its baby while still in the womb. But, you know, in general, they come in pretty loving and open. And so when the animal is kind of caught in a loop, then it would definitely be from what it's picking up off of in its household. And that's why I talk in my book about emotional leadership, because things like worry, fear, all those things are pretty strong feelings that if, you know, that's the underlying emotion for the human, then that, you know, the animal is going to react. They're going to either take on the worry themselves and kind of go inside themselves, or they're going to get a little spastic and maybe dig up the garden or, you know.
Yeah.
They're little reactors to what we've got going on.
Well, they're like kids. You know, kids know exactly where the parents' buttons are and exactly how to push them for the most effect.
Exactly.
I know my dog, she knew exactly how to tick me off. I mean, exactly. You know, she was impeccable about it, and all she had to do was this one little thing, and I would lose it. They're like training allies where they,
absolutely.
They take this one little thing, and you know that you have to work on it because it's not them.
Right. Oh, I've got one going on right now. So I'm in a little boot camp with one of my dogs.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. She is a new to my household, and I've never had a lab before, and she does, well, two very typical lab things. One, she sort of kind of wanders off with her nose, and the other thing she does is she likes the garbage that my other dog would not be, you know, would run to the door to tell me that the cat had gotten the garbage, so my dog would never get the garbage. So my newer dog, Isabella, and I'm on 5 acres, and there's no fence, so when she wanders off, and it's always when I'm doing something outside with the horses that's specific. If I'm just moving horses, she's with me. If I'm feeding horses hay, she's with me. But the minute I get down to the grain and the vitamins, whoop, off she goes. So we're doing some little techniques. Yeah, I mean, it just shows me where I get distracted.
Either that or maybe she's allergic to grains and vitamins. Who knows?
Oh, my God, she loves the grain. That's part of what I've been doing is I kind of keep her on a leash now when I'm doing grain, give her a couple bites of the grain that she's just salivating for.
Huh. It must be sweet.
Yeah, it's yummy. I've eaten it.
Well, now let's take a left turn here. When you realized that you had a viable business
mm-hmm.
that would help you make a living so that you could actually help more people, did you create a business model or a marketing plan, or did you just kind of stumble into what you're doing? And, you know, how do you run your business now?
I honestly stumbled into it, but I've worked for myself for a long time, and I have a degree in theater, I was an actress, and then I was a screenwriter, and so I've always been pretty structured and self-disciplined because I've always worked for myself. So I started creating a lot of marketing then around about a year into it. I still didn't know. I mean, the first year I did it, I was just doing it for free and for fun, and I loved doing it. And then I had to start charging gas. And then eventually I had to start charging for my time because I certainly didn't have time to do any of the rewrite jobs I was hired to do. So then I started doing a lot of marketing. This was in, like, 97. A lot of marketing just around doggy daycares and vet clinics, you know, and I knew that enough vets probably at first wouldn't have believed in this, so my technique was I just went into vet tech. I went into the front office and said to, you know, if there were 4 girls sitting there, I said, hey, who has got a problem at home with your animal? And inevitably one or two of them would raise their hand, and so I'd say, well, I'd love to help, and so I'd go over to their house and talk to their dog or cat. So it'd be the people at the front desk that would end up giving my name out the most.
God, that is so smart. I mean, you just got right down to the nitty-gritty, and you got to the people who would connect you to the people rather than saying, can I work with the dog's camp or something like that? You got right down to the people who would tell other people about you.
Yeah, because they're the ones that are sitting there, someone's paying their bill, and saying, oh, my other dog at home is, you know, shredding the garbage or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because they also have the computer in front of them. So even if they're paying for the one cat to be neutered, they'll pull up the person's name and realize that they've got 4 other cats. And if you're good at what you do, they're going to say, how's your cat, you know, Star? I mean, it's just that's where the conversation happens about health or behavioral challenges. And then Doggy Daycares is the other place. I work with a ton of vets because eventually a lot of vets came around. I mean, my favorite thing to do is, you know, to set up with a doggy daycare to go in and do like a yappy hour and just sit there and, you know, start at 4, leave at 8 and do 10, 15 dogs in 20-minute increments.
A yappy hour. That is delightful.
Mm-hmm.
So you work with them as a group?
I've done this a lot in Florida, California, Denver, and here in Seattle. I get to know the staff, get to know the owner, tell them what I do. Say, look, you know, I can do this. You can charge what you want. Here's what I'm going to charge. You know, and usually they'll take $10, $15, maybe even $20 more than I charge. In fact, there's one place in Boca Raton that just doubled my half-hour price, and she never had a problem getting people. I was like, wow, okay. So, yeah, they would give me a little room or, you know, if they have a big lobby with a lot of retail stuff, I'd sit in a corner and everybody had their private session with me.
Okay, so you weren't working with the animals as a group. You were working with them individually for 10 or 15 minutes each?
Yeah, usually more like 20 minutes to a half hour.
Okay. But all these dogs and cats and other animals weren't in the room together.
Well, in one place they were, but...
I would imagine that would be mayhem.
Yeah, it is. But I'm used to that. I've gotten used to that. But most dogs that already go to doggy daycares are pretty, you know, they're pretty social and they can behave.
Okay. And the way you arranged it was that the doggy daycare would market this and tell people about it and charge for it and then take a cut of what you would get.
Yeah.
That's great. And would a vet do the same thing?
Well, I have a couple of vets that do that. I have one vet in Denver and one vet in Los Angeles. I do phone sessions with he and clients probably every other week lately. I mean, he's got, you know, he tends to get into, if the illness or allergy can't be fixed through homeopathy, acupuncture, or, you know, EFT sort of things, he does something different, but it's called NAET.
Oh, yeah, okay.
If he can't get to the bottom of it, he knows that there's some resistance with the human, and so we do a phone session, and then he tries different remedies.
Do you ever work with animals that, like, I remember taking my dog to the vet for her shots, and she actually would go into paroxysms of fear because of the needle and being held still on the table and being stuck and all that stuff. Do you work with animals about that?
Yeah, and I also either, if it's on the phone, I'm able to walk someone through some basic body work things to calm them, or if it's in person, then I, you know, show them physically how to do it. But there's, you know, stretching the ears and getting them relaxed is pretty important. I'm not a big vaccine lover. Those animals were smart to be afraid of the mercury, but that's my take on that. They knew better than to get a lot of these vaccines.
How do you actually talk to people about such a woo-woo subject so that they can get it without feeling like you're from outer space or something?
I just tell them that everybody's an animal communicator. I just honed this muscle of telepathy and that they also have experienced it, although they might not recognize it, but I'm not special. I just exercise that muscle.
I see. And so that's how you teach it in your classes.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because like when my book first came out earlier in the year, I would go to like the Rotary Club, had me come down and speak, and I would do this telepathic exercise, and I saw this guy, this older guy with a cane, and his arms were folded, and he didn't really participate, and I thought he was making fun of the whole thing, but later on he came up to me and he goes, "You want to talk about animal communication?" He said, "I had this one horse that I knew she was so in tune with the dog, and there was one time I saw her, she whipped around as my border collie was going after a coyote that was going after one of my herd. The cow had just had a baby, so the coyote was about, so it was like he and his horse and his dog were just on a different plane, and were able to save this baby cow from the coyote."
Wow.
Yeah, so there's, It is funny to me how many people, you know, will stand with their arms folded in the corner, and yet they've got a better story than I do.
Yeah, they're just kind of going, this is really far out. But their body language is, they don't understand that their body language seems negative.
Yeah.
What assumptions we make.
I know. I've learned a lot. One time I had to speak at the Green Farm Show in Colorado, and I was like, what am I going to tell these farmers, you know? And I thought, well, John, just do your regular thing. And so I made 60 handouts thinking, now I'm dreaming. If I got 30 people in there, I'll be lucky. Well, it was standing room only, and I had people tripled up over the handouts when we went to the telepathic exercises, and of course this group of farmers is better than any New Age group, because what are they doing all day but animal communication?
That's awesome. Of course they know what their animals are doing, unless there's some kind of Simon Legree where they're just these whip-happy monsters, but they wouldn't even be there in the workshop.
But when you're in the workshop, and is that you're going to serve, you know, if you're living off the land and you're dependent on these animals, it's not going to, you're going to find out pretty quickly it doesn't work.
Yeah. What makes your service distinctive from other animal communicators? Why do people go to you instead of somebody else?
I would say probably a few reasons. One, I've had voices since I was 7 years old, and so horse people really come and find me because I'm in riding lessons. I mean, my ex-husband used to say, well, when are you going to be done learning riding? I'm like, hopefully never. You know, so.
He wasn't a horse person, obviously.
No, and he didn't get dressage, which it's like, it's an oxymoron to think he'd be complete with dressage. So I take lessons at least, you know, right now just once a week, but usually I'm riding, you know, with a trainer a couple of days a week. And I've ridden many different disciplines, and any opportunity I get, I mean, I have clients in Florida that would have me come over and learn reining. I mean, I would go learn whatever. I'm hoping somebody will come let me come over and try a fox trotter next, you know. I mean, I love to learn about all the breeds, all the disciplines, so I'm constantly in the know on that. I've taken every possible body work there is, done the acupressure courses, I've done cranial sacral, I've learned a ton of stuff, so I know specific things that would help specific problems, meaning somebody else, one person might benefit, their horse might benefit from a chiropractor, whereas the horse next to him really might need cranial sacral work.
How the heck do you do cranial sacral on a horse?
It's amazing. You know, like anybody else, if you just go over the ribs and start, you know, opening up the diaphragm, getting the big openings of the breath work there. And
now, are you actually working with the horse or the owner?
The horse.
That's amazing.
Oh, it's so cool because, you know, they aren't saying, well, I don't know if cranial sacral is going to work. They're just enjoying it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's pretty quick. One time I worked on this horse's sacrum, she wasn't able to be bred, and she hadn't come into season for 2 years since the woman's daughter had left for college. You know, she was just really heartbroken and didn't know what her next job was going to be, and so all the while I just put my hands over the sacrum and started opening that up and, you know, continued to talk to the horse, and the woman and the horse were pretty sad about the daughter leaving for college, and next thing you know, when we were finished, they walked her out, she, boom, went right into heat.
Wow.
Yeah, so,
that is so cool.
Yeah, they're open to that much change.
Yeah, yeah. Like you say, they don't sit there and go, well, I don't think this is going to work. This is just woo-woo, hokey-pokey stuff. It's just energy, and they're accepting.
Yeah, so it's pretty profound to see that. So I think that's, I mean, again, because I've learned so many different literal things that add up to the whole picture, even if I'm on the phone with a dog in Wisconsin and I get a sense of something with an allergy, you know, I say, let's go and Google right now and find your new holistic vet, you know, that's going to do acupuncture or, you know, whatever it is. I've got enough knowledge of all the different healing modalities, and then disciplines within dog showing, horse showing, and I still do, you know, just saying that right now, my dog, my newer dog and I are in a little boot camp working a training issue, so she's looking to me rather than the wild blue yonder.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, what are maybe three business tips that you might give somebody who is either getting into the business or been in the business and want to expand? How have you expanded your business? What is a tip somebody you could give somebody?
I think, well, number one would be getting to know, like, the support staff in things like doggy daycares, shelters, and vet hospitals, you know. But it's the support staff that spreads the word. Number two would be getting yourself up in front of small groups and giving, you know, talks, getting out there. That's another thing I forgot to mention, that I did any chance I could. I got up and spoke, and I still do. And, you know, I've had times where I've been a paid speaker, and now with the book out, you know, I'm sort of going back to the beginning and getting up and speaking wherever. And I've got a lot of stuff coming up, so it's going to be really fun. And, oh, another big place would be, if you are a horse person, go to the pack store. I mean, one of the big events I'm doing in a few weeks here is at the big fancy pack store here on the east side of Seattle. Probably 10 years ago, I walked in and did one person's horse for free, and my name hit the streets like lighting hay on fire. So, you know, support staff, getting up and speaking.
Go to the places where the animals are being taken care of.
Yes.
Taken care of and served, like a tack store, or how about pet stores?
Yeah, pet stores. That's another place where I've done group things. And going down to Florida in December, and literally it's like one day I'll be at a pet store, that night I'll be at a doggy daycare, the next day I'll be at a New Age bookstore, the next day I'll be at a farm, and you know, some of it's speaking, some of it's book signing, some of it's readings, but, you know, because they all know who I am, because when I lived there, pet stores, I would go in and say to the owner, listen, this is what I do. I'd love to talk to your dog. And that was it. I mean, that's forever created some business things.
What about 4-H or something like that?
4-H, see, I started in 4-H. I love 4-H. And that's, to me, I have all these 23, 24-year-old kids that are calling me now because they're still competing with their horses that I met when I spoke at their 4-H group 12 years ago.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, 4-H is awesome because you're getting to young minds. And if young minds know that we're all doing this, that less of a battle later on.
Yeah.
It's speaking to groups. If there are two people in the room and that's all you got, those are two more people that are going to understand this. And they're going to tell their friends.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to you about this because it's really an arena that's wide open. There's a lot of EFT practitioners and a lot of acupuncturists and Reiki people, but how many animal communicators do we know? Not very many.
Yeah, I'm really upping the ante with how I'm going to be teaching because for that reason, because I want people to be really well-rounded, and I'm going to put together a giant program, and one of my requirements, and I won't be teaching that part, but I'm going to require that people, you know, if you want a certification from me, you need to go learn something like EFT, you need to go learn something like acupressure on dogs, or, you know, just be really well-rounded so you have an understanding of energy work and an understanding of anatomy.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're going to be doing alliances with other practitioners so that they teach that part and then they come back to you for the animal part?
Exactly.
Wow. Well, now, once again, your website is joanrenquette.com, R-A-N-Q-E-T, and you have a book called Communication with All Life, Revelations of an Animal Communicator. Where can people get your book?
Amazon. I can go to Hay House. It's in Barnes & Noble. It's in Borders. I think I'm going to work on trying to get it into Costco.
Wow, that's terrific. Congratulations.
Thanks.
I've got one more question for you here. And that is, what's one daring thing that you're going to do in the next 12 months?
Putting together Communication with All Life University.
communication with All Life University. Wow.
Yeah, I am creating a 2-year program where, I mean, anyone can take the webinar. They don't have to take it to be in the program. And anyone can come take any one of my classes at any time. But always along, over the years of teaching, there's always been a couple people that have come to me and said, I really want to do what you do, and I want, how do you do it? Yeah, and, you know, I've had some things that kind of took me off the track. I've stayed in touch with all these people, and I help them as best I can, but I've really formulated a thing, a way that I want to do it. And, you know, part of it was writing a book and getting a book out is no small task, and I moved from Florida, and I've been divorced now about a year or so, or 2 years. Some of these things have taken up brain space, but this has always been what I've wanted to do, and now I can do it.
That is really amazing. Now, let me ask you this question.
But it is a big deal.
It is a big deal, and it sounds really fabulous to me. Are you going to... Now, this is one of my big objections to schools, that they don't teach the business end of things. Are you...
No. I mean, my version of what the class is going to be called is Spit and Polish, but it's going to be about marketing.
You're gonna call it Spit and Polish?
Yeah.
Why do you give it that name?
Because for two reasons. One, a lot of animal people really don't, you know, people that work in shelters and people that work in a lot of places, they'll tell me, I want to do this work, but I don't like people. And I think to myself, well, good luck. You know, that's not going to get you very far. So by the time they get to the Spit and Polish part of the class, one of my requirements will be some sort of a spiritual thing that enables them to understand some compassion for fellow humans, because people are, you can't help animals if you aren't working with people.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a big component. So kind of what I guess with the Spit and Polish is getting them to clean up any sort of clean up emotionally, mentally, physically, some of their own stuff. And then really being able to take, like, let's say you had some sort of a tragedy and it's something that's lingered in your past. How do you make that your biggest strength, and how do you sell it? But for me, I had a pretty big tragedy with two horses in 91 and 93, which is what sent me into this arena. And I learned a lot. I mean, with what I know now between body work and nutrition and minerals, I probably wouldn't have had the two disasters I had. One, a horse colic and died the night she was able. She didn't die the night, but she... colic 14 hours after she gave birth to a horse that I had bred her to have, and this was the horse of my dreams. I lost her 2 months later, and then the young orphan colt 3 years later had so many illnesses and behavioral problems that I had to let him go. I mean, he had to go on to the next world. So, you know, it couldn't have been the worst thing on the one hand, but I know those two little beings are part of communication with All Life University.
Hmm.
I mean, people don't come to this work because life is fun and easy. People are going to be losing jobs here, and they're going to be looking deep within themselves about what they want to do. And so some people that come to me are going to be leaving the corporate world or have left the corporate world, so they have some business sense. And then the other type of person that comes to me is the type that just wants to work with animals and doesn't like people. So it's going to be an interesting thing to start, you know, at least kind of clean yourself up, what you're, you know, being able to clear yourself and be clear, a clear vessel for other people, but also to be able to then look very specifically at how you want to market yourself, how you want to present yourself, and what your goals are with your business.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm assuming that you would have something like how to write a business plan, how to create a marketing plan, how to write copy. You know, those are things that you could hire other or do other alliances with.
That won't be my job.
Although you've got some pretty good I'd say you've got some pretty awesome natural things that you're already doing. I mean, you're not a guy in a suit putting ads in paper. You're just going down to these people and saying, you know, let me work with your dog and so you can spread the word.
Yeah, because I found, I mean, I did a lot of advertising in the 90s, and at the end of the day, it was just money spent. It, for me, for whatever reason, and I learned that it was better to, I hired a marketing person in the year 2000, and we put together a plan, and then I've been reworking the plan with the school in mind. And the only reason that advertising doesn't work is that, at least in the 90s, it didn't work for me. No, a lot of people didn't know what animal communication was, and I found that it was either, one, I had to get in front of people and tell them what it was, and then they'd be interested in me, or two, it was always going to be referrals. And still to this day, I always ask people, how did you find me? And literally, September and October, I was so busy with phone sessions, I couldn't even see straight, and every single... I thought it would be from the book, but it wasn't. It was 92% of it was referral, and it may have been even from somebody that whose sister's cousin used me in 01, you know?
Yeah.
But if it's someone that they trust, it's a number they'll hang on to.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Someone that they trust, they hang on to the number. I do that.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, we all do that, so word of mouth really is big. But let's imagine that somebody is coming in, they are from the corporate world, but they've been, let's say, a secretary or something like that. They don't necessarily have business knowledge,
mm-hmm.
but they know that business is important.
Right.
Are you going to be including, like, a business model or anything like that so they can, you know, say, well, okay, I need to set up a website with, you know, a freebie that people can come into my newsletter so they can get a low-end product and blah, 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 something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's taken me kind of a long time to learn all that stuff, too. I've been lucky in terms of referral business, and I've also been very fortunate in things like, for the book, I've been on, like, Good Morning America, Dateline, things like that. But I know not everybody has been as lucky as me, and I know there's still ways to really create that kind of excitement around your work in very simple things. So absolutely, that would be vital.
That's great. That's great. Because I know that when I went to art school, it was all about making art, but it,
mm-hmm.
we certainly didn't learn about the business. And I went through 40 years of being a starving artist before I learned about marketing, you know, that marketing wasn't necessarily selling, it was serving.
Right.
So for you to provide that, that's really huge.
That's at the university.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Joan, is there anything else that you want to add as far as tips or tricks that other animal communicators could do to extend their business expertise or something else that you want to share with us?
I think one of the best things, we always have to look at ourselves. I mean, whether it's one week you get five clients who have liver disease, or for some reason I get it, have a day where all the husbands are named David, or all the husband's name, or all the cats are named Yogi, or, you know what I mean? Like, always kind of observe the obvious, what's in front of you, and really, I mean, I think there's always that opportunity for self-growth, and the more we stay on that track, the better we're going to be in the world.
Because if we don't have the self-growth, how are we going to look around and help others?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Joan, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure having you on my show today. I think that it's really interesting what you're doing, and I just love how you're doing it in such a natural, friendly, human way instead of, you know, making it a business and making it a corporate world. You've made it a friendly business.
Thank you. This has been really fun, so anytime you want to have me back, I'll come back.
Oh, good. Okay, well, I'll keep that on my list.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great.
So this has been Angela Treat-Lyon with EFTBooks.com and EFTBizSuccess.com, where you can get more information about creating success for your energy business, and not just your practice, but your business, and IDareYouRadio.com, bringing you massive support, awesome inspiration, and resources for you daring dreamers who break the mold and live your dreams every single day. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time. Thank you.